Hello, I'm Georgina Marshall, Global Head of Research at ISS, and welcome to our June Proxy Bulletin podcast for the Asia-Pacific region. Today's focus is the Australian market's small but busy mini-AGM season between March and May. This year, of course, the COVID-19 pandemic has had a major impact on markets globally. So we're going to catch up with our head of research in Australia to see how Australian companies and their investors have fared so far and to discuss what trends and issues are coming through that may be important for the main AGM season later in the year. So joining me from Sydney in our Across the World discussion today with an expert view of the recent activity amongst top ASX 300 companies is Vas Kolesnikov, ISS Head of Research for Australia and New Zealand. Vas, welcome. And let's start off with a high-level view of the recent Australian mini-season and whether the COVID-19 pandemic, social restrictions and market turmoil had any impacts for those Australian companies holding their 2020 AGMs early in the year?
Thank you, Georgina, and hello to everyone listening into this Australian market podcast. This mini season did not indicate any unexpected AGM governance or voting issues resulting from the impacts of the pandemic as yet. As companies were generally reporting on fiscal year 2019. But it did lead to major changes in the conduct of AGMs. All AGMs were held as virtual meetings in response to the severe lockdown restrictions placed by the Australian government on gatherings of more than two people. The Australian Corporations legislation permits so-called hybrid meetings, that is, in-person plus remote attendance. However, there was no pre-existing ability to conduct virtual meetings only. In response, the Australian Securities and Investments Commission provided guidance on conducting AGMs in this period that allowed for virtual only options, which turned out to be the way all AGMs had to go. Unlike some other markets where we've heard that online AGMs have sometimes been quite one-way affairs with very restricted abilities for shareholders to interact, feedback on the virtual AGMs in Australia was that they allowed shareholders to speak and ask questions. Companies asked shareholders also to submit questions ahead of AGMs and provided facilities for shareholders to participate during the AGM. Feedback I have heard from some directors has been positive, with increased participation, particularly by institutional and global investors. We will wait to see what investors themselves thought of the virtual meetings. Given the apparent relative successes of the online AGMs in the mini season, the Australasian Investor Relations Association has commenced lobbying efforts for AGMs to become fully virtual. This call for swift action may concern some investors, given that even the hybrid model of the AGM, which includes a combination of physical and virtual attendance, has not often been used by boards prior to this year. In more normal times, a hybrid AGM could indeed facilitate greater investor participation while also ensuring transparency through a public demonstration of accountability by directors in a way that virtual-only meetings may not. Some companies brought forward the timing of their AGMs in response to the pandemic, while a handful were held over later than expected based on prior year timings. Only two meetings were formally postponed and rescheduled. During this slightly elongated period for mini AGM meetings of mid-March to late June, we issued reports on 49 companies in the ASX 300 index. Of these, 40 were AGMs and 9 were extraordinary general meetings, which were typically convened to approve capital raisings.
Vas, mini-season was your first opportunity to assess the impact of COVID-19 on such areas as capital raising and cash preservation. What are your main observations so far in that kind of area?
Well, Georgina, the extraordinary meetings embodied the flavour of the times, with most of these being held to approve non-pro-rata capital raisings. ASX Listing Rule 7.1 allows companies to issue up to an additional 15% of their equity on a non-pro-rata basis. In the COVID-19 economic environment, however, the ASX issued a special waiver to allow companies to raise up to 25% in their placement. While some of these non-pro-rata placements have been quite substantial, investors may take some comfort from the large number of capital raisings in the last 3 months, which also incorporated large pro-rata entitlement offers. Perhaps the most prominent capital raisings in this period included billions being raised towards additional regulatory capital by the Big Four banks. Also, an emblematic of the times last week, Qantas Airways undertook a $1.4 billion institutional placement for its survival. At the same time, Qantas CEO Alan Joyce announced 6,000 job losses that he said will never come back as the airline shrinks to right-size its operations, and 15,000 employees remain stood down. For these and similarly affected employees in this country, the Australian government has put in place fiscal stimulus by way of JobKeeper and JobSeeker payments of $1,500 per fortnight. The unknown factor at present is what will happen when these multi-billion dollar government programs come to an end in September, although the expectation is that there will have to be some replacement. Other notable pandemic-related capital raisings have been in travel groups Flight Centre and Webjet, radio and media broadcast group Southern Cross Media, childcare centre operator G8 Education, and oil search after the collapse in the global oil price. In the majority of these capital raisings, bank facilities and covenant renegotiations were significant drivers. Perhaps the most controversial capital raising was undertaken by data center owner NextDC. Arguably in the right place and the right time, this company took advantage of the increased placement capacity in the ASX listing rules to raise $700 million plus an additional $190 million under a share purchase plan. The CEO stated to the market that he took a personal role in the allocation of equity in favour of long-term investors. Having said that, some investors, including at least one large and long-term shareholder, received nil allocations, which the company asserted was made in error. As a result, this company's CEO remuneration and director election resolutions may come under scrutiny from domestic investors during the main season.
And you mentioned, Vas, that the big four Australian banks have been raising capital to meet regulatory requirements. What's the update on the banks?
The big banks continue to hold a pivotal position in the Australian market. Upon the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, the banks were asked by the Australian government to assist residential mortgage holders by deferring periodic mortgage repayments where customers were in financial distress. Credit deterioration has been observed in bank portfolios to the extent that, in addition to the multi-billion dollar capital raisings, they have been forced to suspend dividend payments as well. On a year-on-year basis, the big four banks have lost considerable shareholder value of 30% or more, with only Commonwealth Bank being the best performer, being down 20%. Investors may recall the controversial 2018 AGM season, where three of the big banks, ANZ, National Australia Bank and Westpac, each received strikes against their remuneration reports. This was in response to the inaction by the boards to penalise executive remuneration for the governance and conduct failures reported in the public testimony in the Australian Royal Commission into misconduct in the banking, superannuation and financial services industry. In 2019 and in 2020, the banks continued to report substantial remediation charges, and governance issues continue to be at the forefront of board meetings. Perhaps the most notable governance issue in the banking sector remains the outstanding resolution of the litigation by AUSTRAC against Westpac in the Federal Court of Australia. Now, this agency is a government agency responsible for detecting, deterring, and disrupting criminal abuse of the financial system. So the litigation involves 53,000 breaches of anti-money laundering legislation and allegations that some of these breaches included child endangerment activities by known pedophiles. At the 2019 AGM of Westpac, the announcement of this litigation caused the CEO, chairman, and chair of the risk committee to resign their positions. So whilst fundamental issues in this case are not disputed, Westpac continues to challenge other issues in court. By way of comparison, Commonwealth Bank in 2017 in a similar matter settled out of court with AUSTRAC and paid a fine of $700 million. Finally, when reviewing the Australian Securities Regulator's media releases, it is clear that the Australian Securities and Investments Commission is pursuing other litigation and action against the banks and financial advisors over breaches of relevant legislation.
Okay, thanks, Vas, and some concerning areas there. And just to change tracks, we've seen in other markets that executive compensation has been affected by COVID, and many companies have taken at least some steps to reduce 2020 pay and bonus payouts. Has the Australian market followed suit, and do you have any early predictions for the main AGM season?
Yes. The Australian market has now seen many examples where executive remuneration has been affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. Predominantly those companies which have had to close their doors during the lockdown and also stand down staff. However, our market is a tale of two economies, with some companies like our largest telco, Telstra, on track to achieve its targets. Other companies that appear to have benefited from the pandemic's restrictions include retailers Woolworths and Coles, which hold more than 80% of our national retail grocery and alcohol sales, and then Wesfarmers, which owns the tremendously successful Bunnings Home Hardware and DIY warehouses. All of these businesses were classified as essential services and remained open during the national lockdown. Both Woolworths and Coles also announced on a positive front that bonuses would be paid to regular staff as a demonstration of appreciation for working under difficult conditions. Given these results, we would not expect executive remuneration at these companies to be impacted much by the pandemic. Other factors, however, come into play. In a non-COVID-19 related matter, it was announced prior to the start of the pandemic that the CEO of Woolworths, Brad Banducci, will receive no bonus in spite of the company's recent strong financial performance. This action was taken to accept responsibility for a scandal involving underpayment of $390 million in wages to store managers dating back many years, even before the start of this CEO's tenure. We are likely to see a much bigger impact of COVID-19 on remuneration at some companies in the tourism and travel sectors, like Qantas, Webjet and Flight Centre, which have fared extremely poorly with their businesses essentially brought to a standstill. The chairman and CEO of Qantas announced that they would take no remuneration for the 3 months till at least the end of the financial year in June, and bonuses were suspended across the company. Subsequently, the company also announced that the remainder of the board and executive team would have a 30 to 100% pay cut. At Flight Centre, executive remuneration was cut by 50% after significant store closures and staff stand downs, with travel bookings grinding to a halt. Remuneration also will be impacted in some other hard-hit industry sectors. Star Entertainment, which operates casinos across multiple locations, was forced to close its doors and stand down staff. Here, the company announced that the board and executives would be taking significant reductions in pay and fees, although the specifics were not disclosed as yet. Department store Myer announced that the board and senior executives would essentially work for nothing and receive no remuneration. given their lengthy store closures and staff being stood down. Retailer Harvey Norman announced that the founder and executive chairman, the CEO, CFO, and several directors would also forego 20% of their remuneration. And the CEO of retailer Premier Investments, which owns several fashion and retail brands, would also work without pay.
And what about remuneration at the big banks that you mentioned had received strikes in recent seasons? And for those less familiar with the concept of a voting strike in Australia, it's where a remuneration report, or say on pay vote, receives less than 75% support.
Well, the governance culture at National Australia Bank has changed quite substantially since its 88% shareholder vote against the 2018 remuneration report and appointment of a new chairman and CEO. In response to the COVID-19 pandemic, NAB announced that bonuses were suspended for the second consecutive year, and CEO, board and executive team were taking a 20% pay cut for the 6 months till its financial year end on September 30. Westpac also announced that there would be no bonuses for executives. It will be interesting to watch Commonwealth Bank and ANZ as they have made no similar announcements, however.
Thanks, Vas. And it is indeed interesting to see such proactive steps being taken by some companies, executives and directors. Have there been any significant remuneration trends in the companies which held their AGMs in the mini-season?
Indeed, Georgina, it's been a mixed bag. On the one hand, the mini-season confirmed that some boards were already prepared to pay zero bonuses where performance targets were not met. On the other hand, there were also some boards that made discretionary retention and bonus payments. I can recall at least four companies that paid nil bonuses to their CEOs and executives, including oil and gas distributor Ampol, which was formerly known as Caltex, big building products manufacturer CSR, and auto leasing and salary packaging company Smart Group. Interestingly, childcare centre operator G8 Education also paid nil bonuses when it became clear after the company's financial year end that its operations and prospects deteriorated significantly upon the onset of COVID-19. The CEO also announced that he would take a 20% pay cut from May to October. We would expect this trend to continue in the main season, especially with COVID-19 impacting the earnings of many companies. The large REITs also experienced tremendous falls in their share prices. Two of these had their AGMs in the mini season, namely GPT and Scentre Group. The latter owns the Westfield shopping centres in Australia. At the time of their AGMs, both had experienced 50% falls in their stock prices. Their responses to remuneration arrangements, however, were vastly different. Whilst accepting an STI for the year's results, the CEO of GPT did not accept his equity LTI grant. Conversely, at Scentre, cash and equity bonuses were granted. The board also determined that it would not be proceeding with one of its development performance measures as envisaged and set as a target in a prior year LTI equity grant. In doing so, the board requested shareholder approval at the AGM to remove this development measure and change the performance metrics for that prior grant. In this case, there was an elevated vote against the remuneration report and LTI and the LTI amendment proposal, although both resolutions passed.
And which companies did receive strikes on their remuneration reports in the past few months?
Well, underperforming life insurer and diversified financial AMP Limited received a strike with only 30% support for the remuneration report. The result comes as no surprise. Investors may recall the material corporate governance and conduct issues at AMP identified in 2018 before the Royal Commission. This precipitated a considerable loss in shareholder value as a result of a fall in confidence by customers and investors alike. These issues also caused significant board and executive turnover. This year, the board determined to award executives below the level of the CEO with grossly excessive grants of equity, with some individuals receiving multiples in value of equity grants made to CEOs of some of the largest companies in Australia. Similarly, the board of underperforming pharmaceuticals distributor Sigma Health awarded the CEO disproportionate bonuses and retention payments, earning the ire of shareholders and resulting in a strike. In summary, Georgina, I think the main season went relatively smoothly and remuneration controversies were limited. However, some of the trends that we witnessed, such as pay disparities within sectors, as I noted for the rates in GPT and Centre, and the harsh contrasts in outcomes, such as the largesse at AMP versus the significant pay cuts for boards and executives and other firms, this suggests that this year's will be a very challenging main AGM season on the remuneration front. There appears at present to be an unspoken acknowledgement in many companies that executive bonuses should be tempered. However, the mini season confirmed that there will be considerable scrutiny on boards where there are remuneration outcomes that are inconsistent with peers' behaviour and the broad economic environment. As a result, I expect there will be elevated levels of shareholders' dissent, particularly where upward board discretion has been applied.
Thanks, Vas. And moving to a slightly different topic, is there anything to note regarding votes on director elections in the mini season, or anything else for shareholders to look out for in the main season coming up later in the year?
The mini season was relatively uneventful on the director election front. Perhaps the most public of disputes is the continued feud between the board of Cromwell Property Group and its largest shareholder, ARA, which is a potential competitor to Cromwell for property in the Australian market. Investors may recall that the CEO of ARA Australia resigned from the board of Cromwell earlier in 2019 in protest. At Cromwell's 2019 AGM, ARA voted against all resolutions, however, supporting its shareholder proposal to appoint an ARA representative, Gary Weiss, who is a very prominent and experienced chairman, director and corporator. In spite of Weiss's credentials, this resolution was not supported by a majority of shareholders, possibly due to his overboarding and potential conflict of interest from his relationship with ARA's major Singaporean shareholder. The mini season saw an extraordinary general meeting scheduled for ARA's second attempt to appoint Weiss, and again, the effort narrowly failed to achieve sufficient support. Investors may want to watch out for the next instalment of this tussle in the coming main season. Going forward into the main season, I think many director elections will require a case-by-case analysis of nominees' track records. It is becoming increasingly apparent that historic governance and performance issues involving directors in their past executive and non-executive roles are having a significant bearing on shareholder voting. Our engagements have also confirmed that in this COVID-19 environment, overboarding and directors' commitments have led to directors resigning from certain boards. It is worth pointing out that there remain some large companies with low levels of director independence, and some boards, mainly in the mining sector, still have no female directors. An example of this in the mini season is Jupiter Mines, which delayed its AGM now to be held on July 8. In addition, audit quality and audit fees appear to be attracting scrutiny. Over the last 2 years, we have observed a rise in non-audit fees as a percentage of audit fees in some companies. Bionic ear manufacturer Cochlear Limited is one example. Concerns over audit quality and independence have also been raised in some situations, and these can be seen to have had impacts on shareholder voting on directors and audit committee members. The Australian Securities and Investments Commission has increased its inspection of audit files, and it has publicly expressed its concerns for the poor quality of some audits. ASIC has also commenced legal action against certain audit firms for their failings to detect and report audit matters, which may have ultimately contributed to financial distress and company failures. Our engagements with a number of boards confirm that directors are becoming increasingly aware that Australian disclosures regarding remuneration practices have been lagging. Some boards have explained that they have received feedback from shareholders who cite inadequate disclosure of performance measures and justification for bonuses, particularly where quantum is significant by Australian market standards. We will likely see a continuation of voting trends with elevated levels of votes against remuneration reports and remuneration committee members where governance standards remain poor. Finally, after the events leading up to the 2019 AGM of Westpac, it is apparent that shareholders continue to hold directors accountable for governance failures, whether directors feel it their responsibility or not. As noted earlier, AUSTRAC commenced legal action and alleged tens of thousands of breaches of anti-money laundering legislation at Westpac, which could lead to billions of dollars in fines. As with Commonwealth Bank in 2017 and National Australia Bank in 2018, both the chairman and CEO of Westpac were pressured to resign, and the chair of the Risk Committee withdrew his nomination for re-election. The chair of the Audit Committee survived, although with a 40-plus percent vote against his re-election. So I would expect such voting patterns in director elections focused on accountability with respect to risk oversight failures to continue in this 2020 main AGM season.
And last on our list of Australian topics today, Vas, but certainly not least, to what extent are shareholders and companies looking at and addressing environmental and social issues in the Australian market? Were there any prominent trends in the mini season which could also give some direction for the coming AGM season in these areas?
Well, climate-related issues are certainly front of mind at present, and public debate is escalating each year, primarily as a result of the Australian government's continuing failure to formulate a policy to meet its committed climate targets or a roadmap for the economy and companies to better understand and target their actions and investment decisions. So this has caused many companies to take action themselves in developing their own policies on how they will address climate change. As an example, QBE Insurance presented its policy to reduce insurance exposure to fossil fuels by 2030. Shareholder proponents are also ratcheting up pressure on companies to take action on climate change. The shareholder support for climate-related proposals is increasing at Australian companies, leaving directors without ambiguity as to the direction favoured by their investors. I need to reiterate here that due to the limitations under Australian law, shareholder proposals are never actually voted on at AGMs. The disclosure of the meeting results of proxy votes cast on such proposals, however, appears to be sufficiently indicative of shareholder opinion to sway boards and management. So the mini AGM season this year saw three large companies, Rio, and two oil and gas producers, Santos and Woodside Petroleum, with climate-related proposals at their meetings. I would expect that this is the sign of what is to come in the main season and moving forward into 2021. Shareholder support levels are noticeably higher. Woodside had 52% of shareholder votes supporting increased disclosure of climate goals and targets, and 44% in support of disclosure of membership in industry lobbying activities. Santos received 44% for disclosure of the company's Paris goals and targets, and 46% support for disclosure of the company's membership of industry lobbying organisations. While last year Rio sufficiently convinced shareholders of its climate initiatives to ensure proxy votes against the shareholder proposal at the time, This year, Rio is under greater pressure to act, with 37% of shareholder votes this year supporting disclosure and action on emissions targets. More recently, Rio has been embroiled in a scandal where its iron ore division conducted explosions in the Pilbara, which destroyed sacred and culturally significant 46,000-year-old caves of Australia's Indigenous people. This incident has caused considerable reputational damage, and significant pressure was placed on the board, which led to the announcement of a board-led heritage review. So I think it's reasonable to expect continued activity on the environmental front in the upcoming AGM season, where large miners, including BHP, Fortescue and South 32 may be in the firing line. Georgina, I think that's about it for me.
Well, thanks so much, Vaz. And so that's it for our Australian post mini-season wrap-up. And thanks also to you, our listeners. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. While this instalment concludes our 2020 Proxy Bulletin podcast series, please watch your email for other topical podcasts and webcasts through the year, as well as our published post-season reports for many markets and regions over the coming months. And finally, please do send any feedback or questions on this year's podcast series to bulletin@issgovernance.com. Thank you for listening. Stay safe and goodbye for now.